Welcome once again to another fantastic episode of the Business Creators Radio Show. We help business creators like you win at the game of business and marketing so you can thrive from your intersection of your brilliance and your passion and make a difference for your community, market, and audience. Please take a moment and visit our website, www.businesscreatorsradioshow.com. You'll find hundreds of episodes covering a breadth and depth of topics relevant to you as a business creator, and links to subscribe via your favorite network so you get fresh episodes delivered straight to you. And now, here's today's episode. Let's get started.
My name is Adam Homey. I'm your host, and I am once again honored by your wise decision to tune in and invest in yourself today. The Business Creators Radio Show goes to those places where you have those mastermind meetings and aha moments that can change your trajectory or at least bring you a little bit closer to serving from your intersection of your brilliance and your passion. I'm coming to you today sitting on the balcony of my sumptuous apartment here in beautiful Las Vegas, which is known to some as the hottest city in America. And I'm very excited to introduce today's guest. I've been chatting with him very briefly in the green room here. I like him already, and I'm positive that you are going to like him as well. So let me just tell you a little bit about him, because I know he has a lot to say. His name is Jones Laughlin. Now, he's made it his life's work to deliver powerful ideas and practical solutions to individuals and organizations struggling with too much to do. And he's written books. They've been described as illuminating, and his presentations as unforgettable. Okay, I believe that fully just based on my impressions of the man. So there is so much in his bio. I'm just going to pull out a few things that I think are going to be really interesting to you. And then we're going to have Jones tell some of it in his own words. So among other things, he has worked with organizations like FedEx, Walmart, Choice Hotels, Toyota, Bridgestone, American Farm Bureau, Berkshire Hathaway, the United States military, as well as others. He is the co-author and author of four books, including Always Growing, Juggling Elephants, and Getting to It. He's also worked as a senior trainer on the best-selling book, Who Moved My Cheese, training individuals from over 15 countries and presenting to over 275 different groups ranging in size from 25 to 8,000. Oh my God, I am just already thinking this is a blessing that we even get to speak with this guy. Wow. Jones Laughlin, come on in. The weather's fine.
Wow, Adam, what a fantastic introduction. I should get you on the road with me. I would get standing ovations before I even started. That was so kind of you, all those things. I'm glad to be with you today to have this conversation. I can feel the energy through the internet. So let's get started.
I'll open for you any day. So now here's what we like to do. I read off a piece of the official bio, and sure. And I'm not even sure I'm worthy to be in your presence. This is so impressive. But what we'd like to do is we want to get to know you a little bit. So we like to pull behind the curtain or open the curtain and have you tell us a bit in your own words, a little something about your journey and what's brought you to where you are today, serving business creators from your intersection of your brilliance and your passion the way you do.
Sure. Well, thanks for that. Yeah. My background is education. I'm a former teacher here in North Carolina. Did that for a few years and then went into the speaking and training space. Mm-hmm. And my passion has always been around giving people practical ideas or models to help them improve, to take that next step. I believe that most of us know what we want to do. We just don't know how to get there, how to take that next step. And so my journey has included a lot of content development around that. And it, I guess really the really big break in my career, because I think we all have either a number of big breaks or a big break and different things. You mentioned about Who Moved My Cheese. I was a trainer for that book. I love the book and contacted the company and said, hey, if you ever need a trainer, I would love to help out because I believe in the message. And actually, it worked out. I did work for them. And it was fascinating to watch people connect with the message and be able to determine what they needed to do about change just by hearing the story of Who Moved My Cheese. And again, that goes all the way back to 2000. And since that time, I have continued to develop metaphors and analogies of my own. I did not write Who Moved My Cheese, or you would not be talking to me today, Adam. But yeah. I did not write that. But I've come up with other models and metaphors that help people to say, here's where I am. And okay, here's what I need to do to take that next step.
Awesome. Awesome. All right. So what I love about this is that you are involved in the Who Moved My Cheese thing. And I first heard about that over 20 years ago in my last corporate job when one of the many people who were licensed to train on that topic came in and did a presentation for our staff. So Who Moved My Cheese, we all know about that. But there's this other title out there, which I'm now hearing about for the second time, called Juggling Elephants. So how'd you come up with that one? Let's start by defining some terms.
Absolutely. Juggling elephants is what it feels like when you're trying to get it all done and work in life. You're trying to get things done and it just feels heavy. It can feel overwhelming. And that's juggling elephants. And so my co-author, Todd Musick, and I came up with that idea after. Actually, it was secondary to the whole concept. We started talking about how busy life was, and Todd started mentioning about, hey, I just don't feel like I'm being the dad or spouse I ought to be. I just don't feel like I'm getting the right things done at work. I don't have time for myself. And I'm standing there going, yeah, we all struggle with that. And then Todd said, in a moment of brilliance, he said lots of them, but that was one of them. He said, am I supposed to run around like my life's some kind of circus? And I said, what'd you just say? He said, like my life's some kind of circus. And I'm like, what would it look like if you did manage your life like a circus? And so we went in and had that napkin moment. You know, you see people drawing. Now, it was actually on 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper. But we started, brainstorming ideas. And then we said, okay, if you're managing your life like a circus, before you start doing that, or what act would you hopefully or would you potentially see in the circus that reminds you that you can't get it all done? And we talked for a while and said, juggling elephants. Juggling elephants. That you would never see that act in the circus because it's impossible. But it's what we try to do each day in our workplaces and in our homes is we think we can get it all done. And so we came up with this model of managing your work and life like it's a circus.
Yeah. Well, I think that's great. And because I'm thinking juggling elephants. See, when I think of elephants, I think of the big animal that never forgets.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yep. And it's ironic. We've had other people say that too, Adam. And when you're juggling elephants, you are trying to remember everything. You're trying to hold on to everything in your mind and go, okay, what was I supposed to be doing? Or what am I supposed to be doing next? And it really does create almost a mental overload when you've got so much going on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, let's dive into that because this is the quintessential entrepreneurial dilemma. It's something I feel all the time. What, in your experience, are some of the biggest reasons we feel a constant sense of overload, even when I am completely following my project plan, using all my simple tools to keep things aligned? I sometimes, well, not sometimes, maybe 20 times a day, have this holy shit feeling. I'm going through it right now. I'll tell you in all candor. Now, the Business Creators Radio Show is audio only because that's just the way it's always been. Sure. And these are more, like mastermind conversations where we kind of riff off each other. And sometimes one of us will be saying something, the other say, oh, because we can't wait because we've gotten so inspired by it.
Exactly.
And the way this typically happens is we're not going to be like staring into cameras. We're going to be hanging out at a cafe or something. And we'll probably be sitting side by side at a table. We'll be just sort of, going back and forth. You'll have the whole mastermind, let's kick ideas back and forth thing. Plus, I think it's cool we get to drink whatever the hell we want. But another thing is I'll tell you in all candor, sometimes while I'm doing these interviews, I'm also writing down some of the aha moments I get from you as the guest. And sometimes I'm actually dealing with some other minor client issue over Skype like I am right now. But I do have the ability to multitask and be in both places at the same time. Among the tabs I've opened are your website, a couple of the sites related to your books. So I wanted to get into Jones Laughlin zone right before I logged in here. And So tell us, in your estimation, let's get this back to you. What are the biggest reasons we all feel a constant sense of overload in our lives?
Okay. All right, Adam, I know this is audio only, but I want you to do something for me, okay?
I can do it.
All right, here we go. I know you can, because something you just said. All right, I want you to take your left hand, and we won't know if you get it right or not, but I want you to take your left hand and point just out in front of you, okay? Just stick your arm out in front of you and point.
I'm doing
and
it.
With that left hand, I want you to start making a circle.
Circle, circle,
okay,
circle.
All right. Now take your right hand and stick your, and you know, point your index finger out.
Uh-huh.
And with the right hand, make a rectangle while you are making that circle.
This is like patting your head while patting your belly. You can't, I can't do it.
That's right. And guess what, Adam? You can't multitask either.
Yeah, sorry. That. Well, I actually wrote about this in my book.
Groundhog Day
is an event, not a business strategy. For our listeners who are familiar with the television show MASH,
Oh, no wonder we connect. It was one of my favorite shows, Adam.
Okay. So you remember Fade Out, Fade In, and Fade In, Fade Out, which were the two episodes where they brought on the Winchester character.
Yes.
And they were trying to impress upon him the need for speed. And what did he say again and again?
I don't remember that. I'm sorry.
I do one thing at a time. Time, okay. I do it very well, and then I moved on.
Yeah.
And my argument is, to a degree, he was correct about that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And to your point, you know, Adam, what you were talking about a moment ago, you asked me the question about why do we feel so, you know, overwhelmed and overloaded. I think so often it's because we're not, I do one thing very well, and I do, or I do one thing at a time. We start something physically or mentally, and then before we get it finished or to a place where we can let go of it mentally, we're off to something else. And you know, as David Allen says, we're doing that quick switching, and it slows us down. I mean, if you, after we finished, regardless of what beverage you are enjoying right now, when we finished, you could eventually get to the point where you could draw a circle with your left hand and make a rectangle with your right, but you would have to move so slow to do that. And I think that's what happens with us in the workplace, in our lives, is that we get ramped up, say, okay, I'm going to work on this. Okay, now I'm going to go work on this. Oh, now I'm going to go work on this. And then an hour later, we go, what did I finish? And the answer is very little.
Right. Wow. Yeah. And you know, I do have those days, and I think a lot of them have. It's like we push a lot of trains, but we only move 4 inches.
I like that analogy. Yeah.
Yeah,
I love it.
And there are times when I just have to get absolutely ruthless about things and just start forcing them into buckets. If that means somebody has to wait, that just becomes the issue. Like, I have had situations where I've been a little bit pressed, and I've had to actually tell clients, I will get to you soon. Remember that time when I pushed everybody else aside for your priority? Well, that works both ways. I'll say, sorry, I get it. Just let's just agree on what the deliverable time is. Good. That works.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Speaking of time, you like to say the problem is not time management, it's choice management. And that kind of feels like where we're headed. So tell me more about that.
Sure. Charlie Gilkey, you've probably read some of his stuff, but I love his book, Getting Things Done. I forget what the title. I mean, Charlie Gilkey, you can look it up. But he talks about how time cannot be managed. Schedules can be managed. Energy can be managed. Activities can be managed, but time can only be accounted for. And so, you know, it really isn't about managing our time. It's about what choices we're making each day that will make a difference. Like you said, at the end of the day, when we go, wow, did I accomplish anything of value today? And I think those choices start, you know, first thing in the morning, when we make the decision to get out of bed and get started with our day. Even then, we have choices we can make that will probably give us the mental and emotional energy to focus on the right things that day, or we will make choices that will cause us to kind of go, I think I'll just roll back in bed, or we just kind of half go through our day and we're not really engaged and focused. So it's just all about the choices we make that, in my opinion, that make the biggest difference.
Right. Certainly. So, going along with that, I mean, so what happens when we feel like the choices are made for us, regardless of our efforts to maintain control of that? Because that is the nature of entrepreneurship, is you have this dream of being your own boss. And, you know, I'll be around people who don't really understand what you and I do, and they'll say, "Boy, your boss is a real prick." Now I say, actually, he's a pretty cool guy.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah. He's fired me often, but he always hires me back.
Sometimes the looks he gives me when I see him in the mirror, son of a gun.
Oh, that's funny. In one of my books, Juggling Elephants, one we've been talking about, I talked about managing your life like it's a circus. And so we espouse that you are the ringmaster of your circus. That doesn't mean you're in control of everything, but it does mean you take the opportunity to control the opportunities you have or the choices you do have. So let's take entrepreneurs, for example. You and I both meet lots of people. Oh, I'd love to go out and start my own business. I'd love to go out and be on my own, but I just don't have the time. And then I normally look at them and I say, well, how much time do you have that's at your discretion? Oh, I'm just so busy. No, that's not the question I ask. How much time do you have that's at your discretion that you have control over? And it's amazing how eventually I'll get them to commit to saying, well, you know, I've probably got about an hour a day, or I've got 2 hours a day that I could commit and say, okay, now what could you do in that hour or 2 hours a day or 5 hours a week, however you want to position it, that could help you take that next step toward becoming an entrepreneur? And it's fascinating in that moment. It's like a light bulb goes off and they go, well, I could start doing some research, or I could start having some conversations with people, or I could start building this widget or different things. But they've just never stopped long enough to say, what are the resources, time resources I need? What are the choices that I could make, that I think are so important?
Right. I agree. I agree with you. So going along with this, where do you start in solving this? Now, I know you coach people in this, particularly when they come to you and they say they're struggling, they got too much to do, too much to handle. And sometimes, and I felt this way myself, it's like, where do I even begin to suss absolutely through this? So what's your recommendation on that?
I have a question I ask. I ask, is it the beginning of my keynotes on this topic, or if I'm coaching someone, I'll look at them and I'll say, what's not getting done for you right now? What's not getting done well? And I'll have them list those things. And for some people, it's the strategic stuff at work or talent development of their team. For others, it's time with, children or their significant other. For others, it's, I don't have any time for me. I hear that often. And I'll say to them, okay, what would it look like if you did have time for yourself, or what would it look like if you were developing the talent on your team? And after they calm down for a few minutes, they go, okay, well, if I could just have more one-on-one meetings with my team. Okay. And it gets almost redundant to say, what would that look like? Or what would that take? And they can usually come up with a plan or a next step that they can take if you get them to get specific, just like you talked about your client that, that you come up with a deadline for. If they get specific about, I need an hour, or, if I had 30 minutes, okay, let's go find it. Because that's one of the other things that I find is that once we can get them specific about what they're looking for, then we're going to go find the resources they need. And most always I can figure out something with them that they could spend less time and energy doing. I mean, let's just start with the obvious one, Adam. For many people, it's social media.
Right.
It's the doom scrolling. For others, it's that time in the morning. I find a lot of people don't use their time wisely in the morning. If they're a morning person or if they're a night owl, they're not using those later hours more effectively. And so I think, it's finding those time resources. Then the other piece, I think there has to be some accountability. I started professional coaching about 7 years ago, and I was fascinated as I got deeper into my training program and then went out on my own as a coach, how people are just craving for someone to follow up with them and say, did you do it? How am I going to know you did it? And to support them in that, not from a judgment type zone, but just say, hey, let's talk about how that's going. Wow, you took the first step. Fantastic. What would this next step look like for you?
Right. Well, you mentioned accountability. So I have ideas on how you create accountability. and adhesion to deadlines, mm-hmm. but I want to hear yours.
So to me, it's when I think of accountability, I think it's just that consistent connection with someone and being willing to, you know, to let them know how you did, and finding that person who will call you out in a loving way when yeah. you don't do something. I think that's just really important, you know, in the process. And so, for example, if I'm coaching someone, I will ask someone, we develop the action plan of their next steps. I'll say, okay, how am I going to know you did these things? And they say, well, I'll text you, or I'll call you, or I'll send you an email. Okay, great. In some cases, I say, I don't even give them that option. I say, I'm going to follow up with you next Tuesday to see if you had that meeting on Monday and resolve that issue. Is that okay? And they'll go, oh, yeah, okay. And to me, accountability can look like lots of different things. It just depends on how willing that person is to partner with someone who will hold them accountable.
Right, right. See, to me, I think you mentioned something very interesting, is the partnership and the accountability. So I have found that, let's say you set a deadline for yourself, but it doesn't impact anybody but yourself. Mm-hmm. Well, here's and this is the funny thing. You may be, even though it's miserable, comfortable where you are.
Yep.
And so many times you've already gotten away just fine with being able to say, oh, well, I didn't make it, I'll do it next week. Or, mm-hmm. yeah, I know I'm in a spot and I really should have done this because this could help my business. But, you know, I've been through this before, I'll make it this time.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But, and so it's easy to just wave that off. Mm-hmm. However, if somebody else is waiting for you to complete a deliverable so they can pick it up and do their piece of it, mm-hmm. then something else kicks in. It's our innate desire to be respected, to have people look at us as people of integrity who come through, and to candidly avoid embarrassment. Because think about it. You know, you've probably let yourself down a bunch of times, and you just said, all right, Jones, I won't do that again. But then you do. But it's different to just let yourself off the hook than to say, oh, well, me not coming through really screwed this project or really caused somebody hardship. Eh, that's all right, I'll just make it up to them. That doesn't work that way.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of the people I encounter, Adam, want to write a book,
right.
or want to create some type of content like that. And, you know, I'll see them from time to time or hear them, or, you know, they'll interact with me and say, hey, how's it going on this or that? And, you know, a lot of times they've not taken the action. And I will say to them, whose success are you limiting because you're not taking action? And they'll say, well, mine. Well, okay, I get that, but you're comfortable with you not being successful. But who else, you know, who else's success are you limiting? Who else's happiness or joy or, uh-huh. you know, are you limiting? And it's amazing how when it starts getting personal, they go, oh, you know, I hadn't really thought about that, because so many of the things that entrepreneurs create do make people's lives better. They make their workplaces more effective. They help teams be more successful. And so I think it's helpful for us, any of us, to put a face to it, you know, make it personal. You know, whenever there's that project that we're not working on or focusing on, is it's instead of keeping it general and saying, well, it's not gonna make that big a deal in my life. Yeah, but what about somebody else who's struggling or frustrated or unhappy? You know, what you're creating could help be of help to them.
Right. Right, right, right. I'm with you. And just thinking about that is, you know, when you feel like you're comfortable in that spot, even if it's miserable for you, but you say, yeah, I've been here before, I'll get through it again. In the long run, that doesn't serve you, because eventually you run out of trap doors. And I know what that feels like. I know other people who have known what that feels like. It is not a place you wish on your worst enemy. Well, maybe your worst enemy. I don't know. I'm kidding. But what, now we're dealing with repetitive patterns, and some of which could be instilled by things that we learned through our childhood, mm-hmm. and other influences that we didn't even recognize were building subconsciously that led us to place ourselves in, shall we say, an inferior position, mm-hmm. So how do we break that? And the reason I ask that is because every year, near the end of the year, you hear about new year, new me, best year ever, audacious new goals. It's really the same thing they said last year. So how do we break that? So this really is new year, new me. This really is the best year ever. How are we getting out of what I like to call the groundhog loop, which is like you're stuck in that movie Groundhog Day, except in hell.
Bad place to be. I think one of the things that's helpful, Adam, is talking with someone who can help you break out of that cycle. I find that even when I'm in that place, because I'm sorry, I don't have it all figured out. I get to that place too in my life, is that you'll read until something makes you uncomfortable and you'll stop. Uh-huh. If you're watching a video about it or something, you know, somebody talking about it, you'll pause it or just say, oh, you know, that's not me. I think you have to find that trusted friend or person in your life who you can say what you just said. I want next year to be different. And now you can do paid options. You can go find a coach. Mm-hmm. I mean, I coach a lot of people around that, but I'm not, you know, trying to get people to go out and spend money on. But I think it is helpful to get someone who's professionally trained to help you to break that cycle. Because if not, you just have this conversation, this loop conversation going on in your head where, you know, somebody who's trained can say to you, what's causing you to continue to make these same choices? Well, I'm uncomfortable. What's making you uncomfortable about it? And then, you know, going deeper with that, because as you said, there's normally some inferiority or lack of confidence or something that's driving your unwillingness to take those new steps. And you got to go below the surface to figure out what those things are.
Right. Now, to me, I think sometimes it's what's hiding in plain sight. So this is one of the cycles that I've been working on breaking as well. You know, you have that feast and famine cycle in the entrepreneur in the entrepreneurial world. Mm-hmm. And when you're feasting, sometimes you have a tendency to let off the gas a little bit. And then next thing you know, you're right back where you started, except worse. So you're laughing knowingly. And you've probably been there a few times yourself, I'm willing to bet. Because I don't know anybody who hasn't.
Oh yeah. And I started my speaking and training company in 1994. Uh-huh. And in 2000, 1999, I had a phenomenal year. In 2000, I almost had to close up shop. Uh-huh. Because as you said, I let off the gas a little bit. A few years later, you know, and I remember in that moment, and I don't know if you ever saw Gone with the Wind, Adam, but that great Southern movie where the heroine in that movie is going with, God is my witness, I will never be poor again, you know? Uh-huh. And I was kind of like that. I'm like, I will never let this happen to me again. I'm going to keep my marketing consistent. I'm going to keep doing the things that I know will have long-term impact. About 7 years later, I'm back in the same boat. Had a great year. And then I had a lesser one. I'm getting better, Adam. I'm slow, but I'm getting better. I had another one in the late teens, like around 2018. But you're right. It's so easy to go, you know, okay, I've made it or I've arrived, and not take those steps that we should take, especially in those feasting times. And so I've got enough history now that I can remember when I had those moments when I'm like, I don't like being here. I don't want to be uncomfortable again. And so that's enough impetus for me to do those things that will hopefully, with what's in my control, not be back in that situation again.
Yeah. As I'd like to say, and I've, you know, experienced this phenomenon myself, you can go from being positive $25,000 in your bank account to being overdrawn in the blink of an eye. And then you wonder how it happened because you didn't even do anything extraordinary.
Yeah.
You didn't have that windfall and say, oh yeah, now I'm going to go buy a bunch of stuff, invest in a bunch of courses, sign up for a bunch of seminars, or just go party on the money. You actually just kept your operations exactly as they were. And then you blank and it's like, wait, what happened?
Yeah.
How am I back here again?
Yeah. Oh, I have had that situation happen with getting comfortable with having, you know, I've had clients who take up a large percentage of my business before. And I love that. Because it's a much easier opportunity and you can really get to know the people you're working with. At the same time, I kind of get comfortable and I'm not developing new content. I haven't been doing maybe as much outbound marketing as I should or developing the relationships I normally would. And I have seen those situations where I go, oh, crap, they're not going to be using me like that next year. Where's the revenue going to come from?
Right.
Yeah, it can happen. It can happen. So I often say when it comes to entrepreneurship that everybody should have to run their own business for 6 months because most of them would go back and hug their employer. They would beg to be able to go back to work where they wouldn't have to be figuring out all these things all the time.
Well, I found some of my own patterns through meditation and hypnotherapy that were putting me in that. So it's still an effort to break out of it, but now I can at least start to see it coming and I recognize what's happening. And this is what I mean by the patterns and influences that are bubbling beneath the surface subconsciously that we don't even recognize are affecting us consciously. So when I was very young, I was deaf. And they did some surgical procedure that restored some of my hearing. I still don't hear all that well, candidly. And because I was late in developing the ability to speak and such, my mother essentially homeschooled me before kindergarten. So I went to kindergarten knowing how to read and write at a second grade level and having other types of abilities. So now I go on to first grade. They determined that I'm basically bored, and they decide to skip me to the second grade. And the way they do it is they hold a big ceremony in the hallway right in the middle of the academic year.
Wow.
So I'm gonna let you bullet point what you're gonna guess right now were some of the impacts of that lingered for a very long time.
Yeah, I mean I'm just trying to imagine it in my mind. Yeah, that's wow, the pressure. And how uncomfortable that was, you know, being around your peers in that situation.
Well, the discomfort went on nonstop for another 11 years.
Yeah.
Cause I was labeled the smart kid.
Yep.
And so I ended up getting behind because these assholes left me out of everything and treated me like garbage.
Yeah.
So the idea that I'm eligible to just have a regular social interaction with my peers is something that was consistently and willfully denied to me. So that impacted my personality development. And I didn't really have a chance to catch that up until I could go off to college, get away from all that and create a new frame. That's peace. Now let's speak about college. Because I had been skipped a year, that meant that I was now chronologically a year behind all of my assigned peers. I want you to picture two things, being in college and being halfway through your freshman year before you're considered a legal adult.
Wow.
And going to Penn State and not being able to have a legal drink in a bar until the middle of your senior year. So here are the pattern between those three things. I'm always left behind. It's my place to be below and beneath.
Wow.
And it's natural that I should be running a pace behind, struggling to keep up. And once that was revealed to me, that hit sort of like a thunderbolt. Wow. And I realized that in a way, this was subconsciously affecting me because there was a piece of my programming that said, actually says, because it's something that's an ongoing thing, that no, you're not supposed to really be successful in business. You're supposed to just get by. No, you're not really supposed to be an internationally acclaimed public speaker. You're supposed to be the guy who supports them while they get all the glory. Because remember, you're the smart kid. You stay at home and study. Everybody else has a life.
Wow. Yeah.
So I invite our listeners to think about what was imperfect about your childhood. whatever it means to you, because everybody has a different answer to that question. What was imperfect about it? What was painful about it? Mm-hmm. And see if there are any correlations between that and whatever pains you're feeling now.
Oh, I mean, Adam, I'll go first or second, excuse me. You just remember. But no, I think that's fascinating because I think back to my own childhood and I've had, you know, counseling and some things to, you know, kind of help me do, you know, kind of what you just talked about. But I was born very late in my mom's life. She was like 40 years old when I was born, and they had tried to have children. And of course, this is days before IVF and different things. And growing up, I always wonder why my mom was just so overprotective of me to the point where it made me uncomfortable, you know, sometimes. And so it was just so much pressure. And my mom, you know, would say to me, if I came home and, you know, had an 88 on a test, and I made the highest grade in the class, she was like, why didn't you make a 95? And I'm like, oh, mom, come on. You know, I did better than everybody else in class, but yet that's not good enough. But she was just so protective of me, because I was her miracle child. And I found that out in reading her diary after she passed away. I'd found some writings of hers, and it was just, okay, now I get why you were so protective. And so it really hindered my decision-making ability then, because everything was based on, okay, how's mom going to think about this? Am I going to live up to mom's expectations? And it took me a long time. It was past college, even. I mean, it even affected my relationships when I was dating, because, you know, I was like, okay, how's mom going to respond? And it was amazing how once I got married, it was like my mom kind of changed. I'm like, who is this person? She was much more, you know, laid back and accepting and positive. But I have seen some of those same things carry over into decisions I have made in business over the years, that I get so caught up in what one person is, what their one person's expectations are, instead of saying, you know, what's best for me in this situation. What would best benefit me? So I hear you on that. And I hope your listeners will take the opportunity to, you know, to look at some of those things and recognize that they are, you know, holding them back from who they can best be, and to have those conversations with people about those things, because it does affect our mental health. It affects our physical well-being in ways we don't even realize.
Right. So, to me, what I like to share is, yeah, I mean, you know, I was born in 1976, so the way I'm a late Gen Xer, but the way I really describe it is I'm a millennial, got there a few years later.
I like that.
Yeah. So think about your millennials, your Gen Ys and your Gen Zs as you work your way down. Mm-hmm. And these were the first generations that had consistent access to high speed internet on fast performing computing machines at a point where search engines became a viable resource for information. So they were the first generation that had access to information and support networks through forums, social media, the ability to connect with people above and beyond your own neighborhood or your own immediate physical social circle. So they became the cycle breakers. Yeah. And now to some of the older generations, and I'm so happy to see that we're now building a lot of bridges to create mutual understanding that none of this was really the case. They look at these younger people and they say, oh, these lazy ass kids today, you know, they don't know the value of work. All they want, they're just in it for themselves. They're not loyal. They won't do anything when everything handed to them. No, that's not the case at all. What we have here are generations that have developed the resources to articulate that they want to do meaningful work that makes a difference.
Yeah.
And their concern is that what they do increases value as a result. Now, they don't see how working in an office doing creative work, being expected to be there at exactly 8 o'clock and stay till 5 o'clock and have your hour for lunch and 2 15-minute breaks facilitates that at all, because you and I both know that's not how human brains work. Now, yes, if you're working in a factory, if you're in emergency services, you're in retail customer service and a number of other industries, yeah, you got to do shift work. But they took the Industrial Revolution model and applied it places where it actually is a hindrance rather than a benefit.
Yeah, Yeah.
And we have the first generations that can point that out. And I also, tell people, don't hate your parents. Actually appreciate your parents, because they raised you with the best information they had. For anybody above a certain age, your parents didn't have the internet. All they had was, this is the way it's always been done, and this is what's expected of you. Oh, and you think you want to cry about this? I'll give you something to cry about.
Yeah. And Adam, to add to what you're saying, I think our society puts such enormous pressure on the millennials, the Gen Zs, to figure out what they're, going to do, or to have so many things figured out. And they have access to so much more information and opportunity, and they don't know. And I, as I often say, because I do some coaching of some college students, and I say, it's don't get caught up in what you are going to do for a career, or what you're going to do. Because, they get asked that question all the time. I say, the better question is to say, what are you going to do next?
And
what are you going to do next? And, for some of them, it's you're going to get your degree. Great. That's what you're going to do next. Okay. Then after that, then you're going to go find a job that has some meaning, because that's just the way you're wired, and that's great. Okay. But again, I just think we as a culture put so much pressure on them to say, what are you going to do? I mean, we started in high school. We started in middle school. What do you think you're going to do when you grow up? I don't know. They have no idea. It's, what are you going to do next? Well, I think I'm going to go to high school. Hey, great choice. And while you're there, maybe sports interest you, maybe extracurricular clubs and organizations interest you. Oh, good. Uh-huh. What are you learning in there that's interesting to you? We just don't handle it that way. And it frustrates me from us older people that we don't.
Right. Well, being considered academically gifted, I was expected to overapply myself. So I'm going to give you two things. Now, I already shared with you how chronologically I was perpetually behind in ways that I only recognized recently had been affecting me in a negative way all along. So after dealing with that, candidly, it felt like prison being in my required education. And I wasn't really ready for college. In fact, I felt I was too young, and I felt that I really just needed to let some steam off. But they said, if you don't go to college now, you'll never go, and you'll end up working a minimum wage job, and no college will ever accept you. Well, that's not the case. See, and what I'm happy about in society is that the idea of what is called the gap year is reaching a point of normalization, that there are programs for high school graduates who are in that phase of their lives to help them use that as an opportunity for the type of exploration and inquiry that will help them have a better sense of what they may want to do or may want to do next once they enter college. See, I could have solved a lot of my issues if I had just said, no, I think I'm going to wait a year before college and I'm just going to work and make some money. And see, that would have also changed me, because it would have taken me out of that loop of, I always have less money. It would have changed to, now I have more money. So imagine, a year later, I go off to college. I've had a chance to blow off this steam, to get myself mentally prepared for this in a better way. And now I'm going to college as an actual adult. And I know that I'm going to be able to go to Penn State and have a legal drink my junior year like everybody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
I used to envy those classmates of mine who did military service and then started college when they were 22.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, you're a freshman and you're going to the bar on Thursday night. That's so freaking cool.
Yeah. One thing I like, I love what you're talking about there as far as normalizing that gap year. I'd love to see a language change to where we called it a closing the gap year.
Develop this, please do. Yeah, tell me more.
I mean, because really, if it's used well, it helps you close the gap between where you are and where you want to be. When we say a gap year, it implies that we're going to stop or we're not gaining something during that season. And unfortunately, I think some people use a gap year like that. They say, I'm going to go off and find myself, and they don't do anything to really close the gap. You know, it's, I think it's about, in that year, it's about, it is about exploring, where that means physically going to other places, but it's also about exploring, what are your interests? What are you finding resonates with you? So that when you finish that closing the gap year, you have greater clarity about the course, you know, the courses you want to take, the major you might want to pursue, or the vocational school or whatever it is that you want to go to.
Right.
I just think, and I have, and you're closer to this than I am, Adam. I haven't looked up to see, are there guidelines for how best to spend a gap year? I'm sure there are. I'm sure there's lots of articles out there.
Oh yeah. In fact, I have a friend who has a program for that. And there are many things you can pursue. You can study abroad. There are online opportunities that you can engage in that help you through that journey. I know another person who recommends that, you should do that year? Spend that year writing a book and getting it published, because anybody can self-publish. So right. You can be applying for college as a self-published Amazon author and show admissions people that you've already thought through and you are thinking through some of the opportunities that you want to maximize when you enter the program.
Yeah. No, that's excellent, because you apply yourself, you are stretching yourself, you're digging deeper into who you are. Writing has a wonderful way of doing that. I think that's excellent.
Yeah. And another person that I work with says, well, find something that you can do online as sort of a virtual assistants type role. Hmm. And that way you start college and you already have a business.
Yeah.
And you already have practical experience working with customers, working with strategy, logistics, creation, seeing your results come to life, and having more financial viability when you enter college. I mean, I remember when I was in college, I worked, I had my part-time career working in fast food, which was actually, in retrospect, very helpful in preparing me for the world of entrepreneurship. And that's a way you can go. But I also remember I got all kinds of pressure from people that I shouldn't have a job at all. I should just focus on my studies. Well, you know, it's a little hard to focus on your studies when you're actually having to think about, do I have enough money for a can of pop? So I went along with that play for one semester, and I said, no. I'm going to have a part-time job. I'm going to have money of my own, so that when I want to maybe go out for a pizza, maybe buy something or go to an event, I can afford the ticket. And just so that I have spending money, I'm not going to be agonizing about being broke. It's just not happening. So the me having a part-time job thing is part of it from this point forward.
Yeah.
And I held to it.
Yeah, that's great. I love that discipline, Adam, and obviously it paid off.
And some of the most successful self-made millionaires I know were the types who went to college, excelled in academics, in many cases excelled in athletics, and also worked two or three part-time jobs. They were busy all the time. So rather than a job being a distraction, it's an enhancement.
Right. Oh, I love that. Yeah. What can I learn from doing this? How can I grow? I'm learning things that are going to help me in business or if I work for someone, but you know, what does this moment offer me? Being curious. Yeah. I think all that's so helpful.
Right. And there's another piece of it that I just wanted to get in here of, having always been classified as academically gifted and having more expected of me, particularly in subjects that I hated and could never even master, like advanced mathematics, which I'm just not wired for that. And I knew, we would talk about what are you going to do next or knowing what you want to do. I knew very early on that I wasn't going to be an accountant, a scientist, or a chemist or anything like that. I knew that when I needed an accountant, I was going to hire one. Mm-hmm. If I needed somebody to do advanced trigonometric measure. See, I can actually say the word, although I don't understand trigonometry, that I was going to hire somebody or call upon a resource. People told me when I put my mad competition level audio sound system in my Camaro that I used algebra and trigonometry. And I said, that may well be the case, but I didn't do it. I read magazines. I pulled up articles on the internet. I asked relevant questions of people who are in auto sound competitions, and they explained it to me, and I did what they said. So I didn't myself understand it. I understood the translation that said, use this gauge wire. This is how you create a ground. This is how you secure your amp. This is how you add a dual battery isolator. This is what a gel cell battery does to enhance it. And this is how you make sure that your headlights don't flicker. But I was following the work that other people did. And that's fair.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. You're using your resources wisely. Have no problem with that.
Yeah. So my fifth grade teacher used to say there are two types of smart people. There are those who know everything and those who know where to look it up. And of the two, the second one is way smarter because they will also be resourceful.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more.
Yeah. What I was going to say here. So at the end of my sophomore year at Penn State, it was my freshman year, I was told that I should apply for something called the University Scholars Program, which when I looked at it, basically meant that I was going to have to spend a lot of time studying math. And I said, I'm not doing this. In one of my very first practical acts of rebellion, I just didn't submit the paperwork.
Oh,
I didn't care. You know why? Because I wanted to actually do something other than freaking study all the time.
Oh,
and there were enough classes available to me in the major that I was pursuing that I didn't need that.
Right.
I don't regret it at all.
Yeah. Wonderful.
Yeah. And now some of our listeners may say, wait a minute, that sounds lazy of you. No, it was me optimizing my resources. I didn't want to study any more math. I wanted to get the full college experience. You know, Penn State is where I went. It's called a university for a reason. Universal. If I had chose to pursue something highly specialized, I would have gone to a vocational school.
Yep.
The purpose of university is exploration, discovery.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. It is. Yeah, completely agree.
Yeah. So tell me this. Mm-hmm. What is something new that you're learning about these days, particularly? Now, I know that our original intention was to speak about leadership. And what actually I think this conversation has evolved is we're looking at the foundations for ourselves that help liberate us to become better leaders. And also because you and I have kicked back and forth some examples from our childhoods, our experiences as entrepreneurs, that we're showing people paths that we have blazed for them that they can now follow that will expedite their journey. So what's something new you're learning?
One of the biggest things, Adam, is mental health, mental wellness.
Yeah.
And the impact that it has on us as human beings and ultimately as leaders, because we bring our mental health into our conversations with team members, into, you know, how we process information, how we focus and spend our time. It has been fascinating to me. And part of it grows out of a journey with our younger daughter, my wife and I, Lisa, our younger daughter, who has had some mental health challenges over the past year. And then I saw how our system, our healthcare system, is not set up, and people aren't set up to be able to handle conversations about mental health. I mean, we've got to make it okay, especially for leaders to go first and say, it's okay to not be okay.
Right.
And so you ask me what I'm learning. I'm learning, number one, how grossly inadequate most people understand their own mental health. But secondly, how many leaders and even our people in the workplace can't even have a conversation with a colleague about mental health. Or if someone says, you know, I'm just not feeling it today. You know, the first thing we say, oh, yeah, you'll get over it. Suck it up. You know, that's that old shift mentality that we don't want to talk about it, instead of supporting and saying, that's got to be tough.
You know, and there's value into saying suck it up. Guy Kawasaki, famously, I remember he gave this interview where he said, look, Monday I was speaking in Singapore. Tuesday I was in an event for my kid's school. Wednesday I was in Tokyo. And then Thursday I was back in my kid's school to pick them up and take them off to a retreat for the weekend. And yeah, I'm moving around all the time. And sometimes it's hard, but you just got to suck it up. Now, If you heard what I just described, this was somebody with goals.
Yeah.
And to a degree, yeah, you got to do it. Like, one of the disciplines I have with my own internal project management system is, if I have five tasks on my board, I'm going to complete all five of them, even if it means I got to push a little bit harder, because sure, I want to stay out of the loop of always being behind. So if that extra half hour or that extra little bit of effort puts me in a place where I'm keeping up, I'm at scale, I'm on track with how everything else is going on. See how that is helping to resolve the pattern I described earlier?
Oh, absolutely.
And saying, yeah, this other thing, it'll take me like 10 minutes, but I'll just do it. No. I assigned it to myself for today. So let's put in the 10 minutes right now. And then we'll do tomorrow's stuff tomorrow. And going to another point, and during the time that I was in corporate for about those 5 years, it was actually mind-blowing to me when I was feeling kind of just, flustered and discombobulated and just couldn't seem to connect. And my boss at the time said, it's actually okay just to say that you're a little off today.
Yes.
Because he said, I'm off most days. So you don't have to run the engine at full throttle all the time. You can just say, I'm not on all cylinders today.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And that is like, wow, I had never heard that before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I had always been told that was just lazy and making excuses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when somebody sees a leader or hears a leader say, there are days that I'm just not bringing it 100%. I'm just not 100%. They go, oh, wow. Okay. So that's okay for us to admit that. Yeah, sure it is. Now, if it's something that shows up over a pattern, if you're feeling that multiple days, let's talk about it. Let's see what's showing up or what's happening that we can get you, help you, get back to being your best self. But we all have those days where, we just aren't bringing it.
Uh-huh. And it's perfectly okay because you balance it out by those days where you mesmerize yourself.
Yeah, I like that phrase, mesmerize yourself. And those are the days that you can do exactly what you talked about a moment ago, where you can push and say, what? I didn't get done with that fifth thing. I am going to push another hour and deliver on that fifth thing. And that's, that's great, because then there will be those days that you have five things and you get three done. You go, I don't have anything left in the tank. I'm just not. Okay, that's okay. Uh-huh. Yeah, as long as you have the day, coming up where you can take care of it. Now, if you have multiple days where you're just getting three out of five, okay, what's the barrier? What's happening here that's preventing you from being at your best?
Yeah. And to me, I think we've just described there, if our listeners want to learn one thing about leadership, it's just creating that radical permission. Now, you want to speak about mental health, as we become more candid about that in our society, I don't know anybody that doesn't have mental health challenges. Exactly. And I also think that sometimes it's approached inappropriately. The first time I, as an independent adult, sought, what we call help for mental mm-hmm. health issues, mm-hmm. I went to some sessions with a PhD psychologist. Yep. And it felt like all she wanted to do was refer me to a psychiatrist. Mm. So then I went to the psychiatrist, and you may have different feelings about this, and I'm not sure what's going on with your family. You did mention you have a daughter who has mm-hmm. some, who's doing some work as well. But this psychiatrist wanted me to take this garbage called Lexapro.
They quickly went to medication, right?
Very quickly went to medication. Yeah. I tried it, and it made me feel so much worse. Now, our listeners know that I'm such an allurophile, which means someone who loves cats, that on my other podcasts, which are my short vignette shows, which actually are video, my cat roams around, gets in front of the camera, knocks over the webcam sometimes, and they actually tune in just to see what antics she's up to.
Yeah.
So this shit that this psychiatrist gave me caused me to get, and I was living with my parents at the time. I was a very young adult. I was leaving for work one morning, and their cat meowed at me, and I screamed at the cat, and he just took off running. And I said, "That's what this shit's doing to me. I will never take it again." And I dumped it out.
Wow.
And then when I informed the psychiatrist that I was rejecting the medication, somehow that got back to the psychologist, who lost interest in me.
Wow.
Yeah. Yep. So let me develop one other thing. There are other ways to work on mental health. What's been most effective for me is hypnotherapy.
Yeah.
So I ask, why does health insurance not cover hypnotherapy? And why in Nevada did a few years ago, we had an effort to actually ban hypnotherapy? I can tell you why, because with hypnotherapy, you can do visioning exercises and not only solve your immediate problem, but discover things under the surface you didn't even know were there. Like all these revelations I've shared over the past hour, that all came through guided meditations and hypnotherapeutic exercises. See, there's no drugs involved in it.
Yeah.
But yet they miss the fact that hypnotherapy has a fun side to it, because now you say, oh, wow, I did that crazy visioning exercise, and now I have this new power. I have this thing solved. I understand what's going on here, so I'm not fluxing by it anymore. And as you peel back those layers, say, "Oh, there's something else." Well, I'm gonna go and have them send me into an exercise. I'm gonna fix that one too. So I think a lot of people would do a lot more of it if it was covered by insurance. And for goodness sake, we pay in insurance anymore.
Right?
Why not?
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I mean, it does something. Whatever, your point is valid, that it takes different things for different people. I have I have a friend who is a physician, and he talks about, people come into his office and, they're depressed or have anxiety or different things. He says, "I'll take out my prescription pad and write down, take one walk per day, or go serve someone else." Or, he said, there are some cases where it is so severe that there is some type of medication that I believe would stabilize them, that because I don't want to walk out of my office without something. He said, but most of the time there's something else that can at least get them on the path to at least getting to a better place. And then we can look at what else might be helpful to help you improve.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's looking at other options.
But sometimes Occam's razor applies. It's sometimes just the simplest thing.
Right.
Yeah. And to me, that's also part of leadership, is we don't always need the committees and the detail analyses and PowerPoint decks to just say, well, we tried this. Do we want to see if this solves it first? And I loop that back to the whole mental health thing. And I say that, yeah, I believe that if, as leaders, if we can foster that conversation and help people, and my other intention for going a little bit edgy there was just a moment ago, was to let our listeners and the world know that it's okay to explore these topics, to have these conversations, even if they're with ourselves.
Right.
That rather than allow somebody else's idea of what you should be ashamed of to get in your way, embrace it for yourself. Not the shame, but embrace the possibility
that you can have
what you want.
Exactly. No, that makes so much sense. Is that, and I like the fact that you said, you gotta move beyond the shame and look at the possibilities.
All right. So, Jones, I'd like to speak with you for another 20 years, but our hour is up here. We may have to have you back sometime. So let's leave that door open. In the meantime, let me just give an invitation to our listeners. Jones Laughlin's website is www.joneslaughlin.com. For those of you who are not seeing our show notes right now, if you just go to Jones Laughlin, that's JonesLaughlin.com. And you can discover so much of what he does. He's got some great resources. There's a blog with some interesting articles. You can see his books. You can see some information about his speaking and coaching. And you can also see just more of his philosophies on leadership, entrepreneurship, business, and life that I think would be great. One suggestion I have, and I'm going to do this myself, is check out his book called Always Growing, How to Be a Stronger Leader in Any Season. I'm really intrigued by that title. And I'm also going to pick up the one about juggling elephants because I physically can't do it, but I want to see what that's all about. We moved the cheese. Now let's juggle the elephants. Yeah, you can find both those books and more at joneslaughlin.com. So with that, Jones, thank you so much for being with us today. It's been an honor and believe me, an education.
Well, thank you, Adam. Thanks so much for what you do for your listeners to help them take that next step to success, both professionally and personally.
We trust you enjoyed today's episode of the Business Creators Radio Show. Check out our previous and upcoming episodes on our website at www.businesscreatorsradioshow.com. While you're there, be sure to subscribe via your favorite network so you get fresh episodes delivered straight to you. Until next time, have a great day. Take care.